kids, let's travel the world together. She can make it easy and in any kind of weather. No TSA, no bag checks, no patting down. She's talking from the skies and sending lots of feel-good sounds. Oh, Betty in the sky, have you heard her yet? She loves traveling, there's no doubt. Betty and the Jets. She's weird and wonderful. Oh, Betty, she's a podcast queen. She's wearing high heel shoes, got her wings on too. You know I've never seen a better stew. Oh, Betty and the Jets.
Hello and welcome to Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I'm Betty. I'm a flight attendant for a major airline, and I bring you stories from the airplane, from the flight attendants and the pilots, and from traveling around the world. This episode, the music is from the Kinky Boots musical. I've been very fortunate, had some really nice layovers in London, and I love the London theater scene. So I got to see Kinky Boots, which is so much fun. Just a rousing musical, and they dance on conveyor belts. It was just fabulous. So I'm including some music from that, maybe inspire you to see it when it comes to your town. And I also saw Beautiful, the Carole King musical. And boy, that was fantastic too. Gosh, what a voice, what a story. It was so much fun. I tell you what, lots of times on a layover, I'm a little tired because, you know, I haven't got a lot of sleep. But I get to the theater. You can buy half price tickets the day of, which is so nice. And I'll sit there and I'm a little tired thinking to myself, oh, I might be a little sleepy. I'll tell you, as soon as those lights come on and people are right there and singing and dancing, boy, wake right up. So anyway, in this episode, we have stories about some yellow horses, a fort, an airplane fire. It's nice. I got a fighter pilot story, which I haven't had in a while, some stinky dogs, the Pips, and a manhole. Let's get on with the show.
As they work together to turn the factory around and be true to themselves, they discover that sometimes the best way to fit in is to stand out.
Let's hear it for Kinky Boots! Yeah! Woo!
Well, boss, is this what you had in mind?
Yeah!
Go out the old way, cause it's been done.
We're getting ready for the new.
Witness the future of Price and Son.
Ow! Papa's got a brand new shield.
I was standing in the jetway waiting to come home from Europe, and you know, sometimes, actually, now most of the time, we have different pilots going over and coming back. They're on a different trip. They're on a 6-day trip or something. They're going back to a different city. So, you know, you haven't met them before. And I'm standing in the jetway. The cleaners were still cleaning the plane. There were three or four of us standing there. And this pilot comes up, you know, new pilot. I hadn't met him before. And he sort of leans over to me and says, yellow horses, and then gets on the plane. And I'm like, thinking, yellow horses? Is that some sort of code? Like, I don't know. Have I met him before and we talked about horses? But there aren't any yellow horses. I was like, oh, that was, maybe he's just odd. So this same pilot comes back to the back of the plane where I'm working to check the water and waste levels. And I say to him, hey, what were you talking about horses? And he goes, what are you talking about horses? I'm like, when you got on the plane, you said yellow horses. And he said, I said, hello, gorgeous. He goes, I guess I'm not very good at flirting. And he walked away and I laughed so hard. Maybe I need to get my ears checked because I swear he said yellow horses. But he said, hello, gorgeous. Maybe I'm bad at flirting too.
I got your solution.
Better get it on and get in step with our kinky
relatives. We're leaving Los Angeles and we take off. It's an L-1011 and we hear this tap, tap, tap up under the front galley there, under the carts. And we're
that
like,
always scares me.
What the heck is that? And so we stopped three times on the ground. Tap, tap, tap.
Oh, my.
It's freaking us out. So we called up front. So one of the guys came back. Tap, 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 tap. He goes down in the hole, can't find anything. We decide maybe we've got a stowaway and we've got to go back because they'll die. So we go back to Los Angeles and we go over the airport, but we don't land initially. We do a pass over the airport, a low pass. Ground says, the tower says they don't see anything. So we come back around and we land. We're there like an hour and a half. They take all the cargo out, look through all the cargo bins, looking to see if we have a stowaway. Don't find anything.
What was happening?
We leave. We take off again. It's the middle of the night. It's an all-nighter. So we leave again, and I called up front and I said, you know, you need to tell these people something.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they don't really have a clue why we were there. And he goes, gets on the PA and he goes, well, we thought we had a stowaway, but I guess we dropped them over the ocean when we made our low pass. And I'm just like,
that wasn't a good explanation.
No one said a word.
Really?
No one said a word. They did not care.
I got this rock the plane story from a fellow flight attendant listener named Joss. He said he was listening to the last episode about people fainting on the airplane and how you can learn to recognize when passengers are going to faint by the way they walk or talk. And I remembered this time when I was on a night flight. I was sitting in the flight deck chatting with the pilots when out of the blue, we felt a little bump. Not like turbulence or hitting a jet stream, but just one little bump that makes you sway a little like when you hit a pothole on the road with your car. For a second, the pilots glanced at each other, checked the weather radar and other instruments, but nothing awkward could be seen. So we continued talking, and after a few seconds, a flight attendant from the mid-galley called to inform us that a passenger had just fainted. I returned to the cabin. When I got to the galley, I instantly understood what had caused that little bump. The guy who fainted was huge. He's gigantic. Weighed over 120 kilograms. Don't know what that is in U.S. pounds, but, you know, really big. And two of the other flight attendants had been sitting in the galley, enjoying a quiet moment, saw this giant guy come into the galley, instantly recognized he was going to faint, and he was going to fall on top of them. So they pushed him out of the way so he would fall on the galley floor instead of on top of them. If not, there would have been more casualties. It's not very kind, but it was very wise. He was really big. That's what had caused the little bump. And it wasn't a small aircraft. It was an Airbus A330. Can you imagine how big you have to be to make the plane rock by falling on the floor? That's a rock in the plane.
There were two passengers in first class, when we had first class.
Yeah.
And they were sitting on opposite sides of the cabin. And one of them was like a trade representative from the state of Georgia, right? So, they were sitting on opposite sides, a man and a woman. I was doing the first class. They said, later, since they were the only two sitting in first class, they decided they would sit next to each other during the flight.
Yeah.
You know.
Right.
Well.
Getting friendly.
That's fine. Until we come back. Oh, I must have been on break, or I don't know what happened. They have rigged blankets around their seat. And his underwear are in the aisle. Oh, go get those underwear. I said, no. I said, Dietmar, you get it. Go get them, go get them. And I'm like, no, no. Because I'm ordering you to get those underwear. So I took some bread tongs, and I picked them up, and I brought them into the galley. I'm like, what am I supposed to do with them now, Dietmar? Right? And he goes, put it back, you know. So I went back and I threw him back on the floor, right?
So you had to take down the board, didn't you?
Well, maybe I went on rest break. I don't remember what happened, but when I came back, the fort was gone. She was sitting on her side, and he was sitting on the other side.
Oh, they switched sides again.
Yes, they went back to their respective seats. Yes.
Huh.
Yes.
Well, this was interesting. I was on a flight to Europe, and I'm sitting in the jump seat that's facing the passengers or the exit row. So basically, you're toe-to-toe with them. You're looking at them. They're looking at you. We're not supposed to do anything. You know, we're not supposed to do any personal pastimes, like be on your phone or read. So basically, you need to chat or else you're going to look like a real unfriendly person because you're sitting right across from them. They're staring at you. So I usually chat. You know, I like to chat. And I noticed the guy at the window had a book, and I was looking at it going, wait a minute. I think that book has been on my coffee table. And I said, hey, can I see the front of your book? And he was like, okay. And I look at it, and I'm like, oh, hey, yeah, I'm in that book. And he's looking at me like, what? And I've never been in a book that somebody was holding on the plane before. And I'm like, hey, yeah, I'm in that book. He's like, what, do you know the authors? I'm like, no. And then I knew that it was going to be hard to explain, especially when you're sitting there in your flight attendant uniform. It's hard to explain that you have some other interests. You do some writing, you know, a podcast. That's all complicated. And so I just said, oh, yeah, I wrote a story for that book. And he's like, really? Like, yeah. No, it's weird, but yes. The book is called Be Invincible, A Playbook for Reaching Your Full Potential. And it's by the author is the guy who was the subject for the Disney film Invincible. And I'm like, here, hand it over. I'll find the page that it's on. It took me a little while because it's been a long time, 5-6 years or whatever. And when they had sent me the book, they had put a little piece of paper where my story was. So I'm looking and looking. And I know he's probably thinking, she's not in that book. But yeah, sure enough, I'm like, here I am. Here's my story. It was a story about jumping off a train in Morocco. And he's looking at me like, well, how are you in this book? And I'm like, oh, you know, I wrote a book. And whenever you write a book, at least my publisher, co-author / publicist, she's like a jack of all trades. It's a small publishing house that put out my book. And she basically gave me a ton of homework. Write this, write that, write this, write that, send it all over the place. And whenever authors or journalists are looking for certain types of things, they'll put out something. You don't get paid. None of it's paid. But, you know, they might, like in this book, they mention my book. So you're doing it basically to promote your book. And I wrote all kinds of stuff and sent all kinds of things in, and sure enough, made it into this book, made it into a couple other books, you know, magazines and stuff. But you know, it's all a lot of work. I mean, really, it's the reason why, and this is going to sound really strange. Well, you know, a lot of things about me sound strange, but I finished the second book, Betty and the Jets, a couple years ago, and it hasn't come out yet. Like I said, it is a small publishing house. But I'm really in no hurry for it to come out, because when it does, I'm going to have all that homework again. It's like, do this, do that, write this, write that. It's actually more work than writing a book in general, all that stuff you have to do when the book comes out. So I know I should be as, I don't, author sounds, I still don't call myself an author, but I guess, quote unquote, author. I should be like, when is my book coming out? Darn it. But instead, I'm like, oh yeah, take your time. It's fine. I'm in no rush. Because I know how much work it's going to be. But anyway, it was so strange to have the guy sitting across from me with the book that I wrote a story for. And another book that I was in, and you know, what are the chances that someone's going to be holding Trucker Ghost Stories? I wrote a story for that too. And speaking of being in other people's books, I just got an email from someone saying, hey, do you know that you're quoted in Arianna Huffington's new book? And I'm thinking, huh? you know, Arianna Huffington's from the Huffington Post. And regardless of your political persuasion, you know, she's pretty well known. And I'm thinking, how in the world am I on her radar? But her book is called The Sleep Revolution. So she must have got a quote from me that I must have wrote it for Yahoo or something. I mean, I've wrote so many things for so many different publications when I was trying to promote my book that I guess she got that from somewhere. But I was like, oh, well, that's flattering. I'm in Arianna Huffington's new book. How weird. Okay, you're on your way to Japan.
Oh, we had just got the engine fire out, and we're headed back to Japan to go land. So now we need to get in touch with the Japanese controller and tell them what our situation is. So as we're trying to get communications with the controller over there.
What kind of plane were you on?
It was an A6. So we had a we had an engine fire, and we had gotten it out. We're heading back to the shore. We're trying to talk to the Japanese controller. We're emergency aircraft. We need to come in and land. And they come back and say, oh, say the state of your emergency. And I said, we're on fire, but we got it out now. When we're good to go, we need to come back and land. He said, you're on fire. You not come here. So it was a little language barrier to tell him, no, we had lost an engine. They said, okay. So they said, okay, so your engine's working now. And I said, no, we lost the engine. You have no engines. No, we have one engine. So what's your problem? We had two. We now have one. We're declaring an emergency to come back and land. It took a little while to finally get him to understand that we needed to come back.
Come here.
A little clip for something that was fun for me. You know, I have one of my hobbies, interests, passions, whatever you want to call it. I like the stock market. It's respectable gambling. I enjoy it. And, you know, I invest with what little money I have, but I like it. It's fun. Not everybody enjoys it, but I do. And I got invited on a financial podcast, which was flattering to me because that's something different. Never done that before. And it's called Stacking Benjamins. It's at stackingbenjamins.com. You can also find it in iTunes. It's a good podcast. And here's a little clip of me on my very first financial podcast. Exciting.
Yeah. Betty, an anonymous flight attendant. And I'm so excited because Betty is my favorite podcaster. I got to tell you, I tell Cheryl, like, Jill Schlesinger from CBS is coming on. Oh, that's neat. Ed Slott's coming on. Oh, that's cool. Jane Bryan Quinn's coming on. Ah, neat. She doesn't care. I told her that Betty's coming on from Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. She's like, that's awesome. That's incredible. She is way more excited about Betty being here than she was about any of those people. So. You were there to see me through. Now let's hold and
lend some love and do the same for you. Okay, once upon a time I was in a briefing. And it was in Amsterdam, and we had a pilot come into the briefing room saying that our compartment down below was not able to be warm, so we had these dogs, and these two dogs were weighed about 9 kilometers, and
kilograms.
Yeah, whatever. Anyways, we thought 9 pounds. We didn't realize how big these dogs might be, but of course. Of course, we all were willing to accommodate the doggies. So we said, yeah, sure. It was on a DC-10. So we all agreed, and they blocked off the last two rows on the DC-10, and they bring these dogs, and they were huge. They were German Shepherd puppies, two of them. And they stunk to high heaven. And I was talking to two farmers as they were bringing these dogs on, and I said, oh, we just wanted to make you guys feel at home. So here you go. But everybody started going, you know, was complaining about the smell. They're like, I'm not going to ride in with these dogs. So, and the people were from Russia. They were coming to the U.S. and didn't speak any English. And I didn't know how to communicate to them how we were going to, you know, get the dogs off. But anyways, we did. We just had to take the dogs off, and I don't know. That was just a really funny experience to me. And they were big dogs, and we had to take them off, and they had to go on a later flight. And the poor Russians didn't get their dogs when they landed in the U.S.
She didn't tell the end of that story because she didn't think it would come over on an audible medium, but I can tell it to you. She said that she was worried about that Russian couple not understanding what happened to her stinky dogs and why they weren't on the plane because they only spoke Russian. So she said to the agent, you know, we need someone who speaks Russian. He's like, no, I can handle it. I'll handle it. And he walks up to the Russian people. He takes his fingers and he puts them over his nose, you know, the universal sign for smelly. Points to the dogs and points. They're going off the plane. So he's like, there, I told him the stinky dogs are off the plane. Oh, Well, I'm always looking for sleep aids, like some things to help you sleep and crew rest, because you only have a certain amount of time. You know, you've been working, and then all of a sudden it's like, hurry up and sleep. And it's difficult to sleep, and you can't take any, you know, you'd be a fool to take like Ambien or something on the plane when you're at work. I mean, that's crazy. But I like to try to find, you know, legal, non-prescription sleep aids. So I had read something about these essential oils that help you sleep, this blend of like 10 different oils, one lavender and like all these different oils. And I had read some reviews on Amazon that were like, oh, it's better than pot for helping you sleep. And I was like, hot diggity, I want some of that. If it's just essential oils, you know, they should smell good. It should all be great. I can, you know, rub some of that under my nose and crew rest and hopefully maybe I can sleep. So I get them and I'm sort of excited about it, right? Because I'm like, this is going to be the, you know, miracle cure for sleeplessness and crew rest. So maybe my expectations were a tad too high. So I had excitedly rubbed it on. I actually rubbed it all over my face, my hands, put it on the bottoms of my feet, thinking it's going to work. It's going to work. And so didn't work. Maybe I was too amped up about trying to sleep. Anyway, I came up from crew rest and I was flying with a straight male flight attendant. And at least I think he was straight. Lots of times, so hard to tell, but it doesn't really matter. But I said to him, I was sort of dejected and I was like, my essential oils didn't work, assuming he would understand what I was saying. And he was just looking at me very strangely. He was just really giving me an odd look. And I was like, what? And he goes, well, that's really personal. And I'm thinking, what? And he goes, your essential oils didn't work either. I said essential oils. And he heard, probably because he hears that word more often, he heard sensual oils, like I was doing something very personal in crew rest. And I was like, oh, no. I showed him the little bottle. I'm like, no. Essential oils, not sensual oils. Well, if you're in need of any essential oils or some sensual oils, you can always find all of those things on Amazon. And if you go to my website, BettyInTheSky.com, click on the Amazon links, or you can bookmark the Amazon links. It won't cost you anymore, and it supports the show. You might even want to buy some of those books that I'm strangely enough in, like the Trucker Ghost Stories, or Be Invincible, or The Sleep Revolution. If you want to buy anything, go into Amazon, please consider going to my website, BettyInTheSky.com. It supports the show, and I thank you so, so much.
She commuted to Miami, and you know how his commuter is always running for the flight, She gets to Atlanta and running to the gate. The gate agent is closing the door and says, come on, get on, take any open seat. She's like, oh, thank you so much. I'm going to get home early.
Oh, thank God.
Thank God. Just take any open seat. So she grabs a seat. And as they're pushing back,
the PA
comes on and says, we're going to be showing a preview of the movie for the flight so you can purchase headsets afterwards. She goes, movie?
Yeah, to Miami.
She goes, sir, where is this flight going to? Salt Lake City. She went all the way to Salt Lake City.
So she did not get home early.
Took off the next day. Something happened to me on a flight. We were going to Panama City, Panama. I was doing that trip to Panama down. So, you know, we take off and the other speaker and I started doing the forms, landing forms for Panama. And this really nice, gracious lady, British lady, goes to me, excuse me, why do we need customs forms to go into Panama City, Florida? And I'm like, you're joking, right? We're not going to Florida. We're going to Panama, the country. And she's like, no. And she started laughing. I mean, she took it really well. And we're like, how did you get on this flight? The agents should have caught this. So we looked at the ticket, and no. What happened, the travel agent
in
England sent her to Panama City, Panama.
Yeah.
Thinking it was Panama City, Florida.
Originated that way.
Yes.
Oh my God.
So we didn't go. We didn't. We took her with us.
Yeah.
We didn't land any, you know, in Orlando or anything. No, she went all the way to Panama. The next morning, she was on the airplane with us.
I hope we helped her to
We put her in first class the next day.
And you know,
she thought it was funny.
Because people don't realize there's two. So when they're booking it themselves on the internet, they book it to the wrong. Either I've seen it when someone was trying to go to Panama with friends, but they went to Panama City, Florida.
Oh, instead
so
of,
it took them a couple days to meet up.
So at work, I tend to tell stories once somebody else brings up a subject, and then I tell my story that relates to that subject. And so I'm going to tell you this story because this prompted the next story. A couple years ago, I don't know if you guys remember this story, but it was on one of my flights. We were going to Rome, and Chris Rock was on the flight. And I think we started talking about this because, you know, he had just been on the Oscars, and I guess, you know, he's in the news and stuff like that. So he was getting on the plane, and somebody brought him down early because, you know, like a handler, like a, you know, it's just a courtesy because he's famous. They brought him on before we started boarding the flight. So there was a female pilot, and she was out in the jetway, and she saw the airline employee with Chris Rock, and then she just assumed that Chris Rock, you know, worked for the airline. He was like a ramp guy or something. So she said to him, as we're supposed to do, if you see an employee who doesn't have their ID badge on, you're like, where's your ID? And he was thinking probably, you know, ID to like drink. And he goes, ID. And then she was totally embarrassed later when she found out that she had just challenged Chris Rock, thinking he was like a ramp rat.
But anyway, this friend of mine, we had just started flying, and I think she was going from Atlanta to LA or somewhere. But anyway, Gladys Knight was on the flight, you know Gladys Knight. Anyway, so then she's sitting up in first class. I think it was back in TriStar Day, you know. And then there were these guys back in the back, and they had all like these pastel suits and stuff. Yeah. Each one of them had a different suit. And she said, "Are y'all the pimps?" And they said, "No, we work on the ramp." It was just the opposite. Yeah. They had like these pastel
Are you
suits.
The pimps?
Are you the pimps? Pimps, not the pimps.
Well, one day we were flying from Frankfurt. We were on a full airplane, and there was an Indian man who came to the back. And he says, "I want to sleep on the floor here because I'm very tired." And I said, "Sir, I'm sorry, you cannot sleep on the floor here." He goes, "But I'm very tired. I do not like my seat." I said, "I'm sorry, you cannot sleep on the floor here." Because I must. I'm very tired. And I said, "Well, I'm sorry, you can't.
It's not allowed."
And I said to him, I said, "You know, if you really want, I mean, what I could do," because you're sitting in a middle seat, right? I said, you could go into the bathroom and you could lock the door. And we could just put a it's an inoperative bathroom. And you could stay in there for a while. No. So he asked me for an aspirin and a glass of water, and he disappeared, right? A couple months later, I get a frantic call from my supervisor. "You have to come into the office and discuss an issue, blah, 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 blah." I'm like, "Oh my God, what is going on?" So I go into the office. This man wrote a letter, claimed that he came to the back and asked me for an aspirin, and I told him to go lock himself in the bathroom.
That's his version of the story.
Yes.
I don't believe I've ever talked about my ethnic background, except for to mention I have blonde hair and blue eyes. And when people ask what my ethnic background is, I used to say, until it became, I think, maybe a little slightly offensive, I used to say a bunch of white people, but I didn't mean white in an ethnicity white. I meant white as in pale, because I'm very pale. And people used to say I look like Sandra Locke, you know, the Clint Eastwood's old girlfriend a long time ago. She's really pale. And I'd be like, "You're just saying I'm pale." Anyway, I've now changed my a bunch of white people to a bunch of pale people, but I'm actually German, Scotch, Scotch-Irish, Dutch, and English, and a itsy-bitsy, teeny-weeny, I think, 192nd American Indian, so I don't think that counts. I didn't get any of the pigment from the American Indian, but I'm mainly German, and I like to fancy myself having the German efficiency, but most of the time I probably fail because I have a lot of, you know, I have a lot of things going on and I never know which project I'm working on, but I do value efficient use of my time. So I commute to work and I have to drive an hour to get to the airport before I fly standby. That's why the whole process takes a long time. So I have at least 3 hours drive a week, but more likely usually 4 hours at least in the car a week. And you know, that kind of time is just kind of shot. You know, you can't really get anything done. You can talk on the phone. So I've come up with a way to make that driving time more efficient. So I work out in the car. People are like, "You what?" I'm like, "Hey, no. It's not, there's nothing about it that's not safe because I always have my eyes straight ahead and I always have at least one hand on the wheel. But I keep a dumbbell in the car. And I can do curls. I can do what would be like if you were doing jumping jacks, but with just with your arm with the weight. You know, I do the one side, then I do the other side. And I have like, I have quite a few different exercises you can do for your arm with no problem driving. And I also put it on cruise control. And you can do like some thrusts. You can, I do some, you know, stomach crunches. You know, there's quite a few things you can do sitting down. To get, I mean, granted, it's not a great workout, but, you know, it's more workout than you're going to normally get driving. I keep upping the weight on the dumbbell in my car. I just have the one because the other one I keep on the wheel. And I'm always looking straight ahead. So I don't think it's necessarily dangerous. But I also do, like, remember the old exercise you used to do when you were 12? I must increase my bust. That's like kind of pushing. You can do that on the steering wheel. So you're like, you know, compressing the steering wheel. Anyway, I have managed to be creative enough to come up with quite a little car workout routine. I do think that most likely, if anyone, because in general, you don't really look in other people's cars when you're on the highway. But if, you know, someone was to look in my car, here I am in my flight attendant uniform with a dumbbell. And the dumbbell, one of them was bright pink, and now this one's teal. And I would imagine I'm quite the sight working out in my car, driving to work in my uniform. I was telling another flight attendant in the galley about my car workout, and I was showing her some of the exercises I do with my dumbbell, and obviously I have more room on my right-hand side because of the passenger seat, so I'm showing her, like, I hold it out, and I kind of do this, like, tricep. Is my arm straight? I'm putting the dumbbell up and down, and so she said, "Well, how do you do the other arm? Do you open the window?" And I thought, oh my gosh, now that would be really, really conspicuous if I'm driving down the freeway with my window open and my arm out the window doing exercises with my bright pink dumbbell. I'm like, no, I have to modify the other side.
We pick up into car. We're on our way down to South Africa, and the van is an old rickety van, and the luggage cart is just a trailer they attach to a hitch in the back. So we load all of our stuff, or the driver loads all of our stuff. We get in the van and we start driving towards the airport. Well, we're going down a hill on the way through town, and I'm in the last row of the van, and I look to my left, and there's a luggage cart on its own. Driving down the left-hand side of us. So it winds up, our luggage cart winds up passing us and hitting the curb down the road, blew a tire. So everybody's taking pictures. Everybody gets out of the van while a stranger on the street and the van driver replace the tire. Well, one of the girls who is taking a picture, she comes around the corner because she wants to send it to everybody. She disappears out of sight. She fell in a manhole. And we're like, where'd she go?
She fell in a manhole.
And we had to pull her out, and she was...
Oh, my God.
She ripped her hose. She was bleeding at the knee.
I bet it was dirty.
Oh, it was sick. It was a gutter. So as soon as we get to Cape Town, we got a runner. One of the crew members ran her down to the clinic and got her all of her tetanus shots and all that.
Got that covered. She fell in a manhole.
Yeah.
It's glamour for you.
No.
Well, that's about it for this episode of Betty in the Sky with a Suitcase. I think I'm going on a trip in a couple days. I haven't decided where I'm going, just a small trip, like maybe 4 days. I'm not sure where, but I'll tell you all about it in the next episode. Hope you'll join me again next time so we can travel around the world together. Thanks. Bye.